Okay, we're moving to the fifth of the prophets. We've done the four, though we skipped Isaiah, you know that. The four of the 8th century prophets. We're now moving into the 7th century. Last week we did Micah, and Micah's about 100 years before Zephaniah. So there's a 100-year gap where there are no, we can't say there are no prophets, there are no scrolls written from what prophets said. There's a bit of an insight in that too that I'll share with you as we go along here. So let's look at the history background to this. King Hezekiah was the king in Jerusalem from 727, and I think it was when he was quite young, a boy, still not in his maturity, became king at the assassination of his father, but he was under some kind of care. And he was king right through to 687. The key event of that period was the destruction of Samaria, which is here, in the north in 721. I did that with you last week, or the week before. So that's the key thing, the collapse of the northern kingdom. Well, what's happening? We know it from archaeology, which has affirmed the biblical record in this, as in many other things. Of course, if you're up here and the Assyrians are all pouring in, you're going to try and escape, aren't you? So there's a big refugee movement down. And while Hezekiah was king, Jerusalem moved over to the Western Hill, which is now sometimes called Mount Zion, if you've been to Jerusalem, the Western Hill, and he put the wall. Jerusalem expanded amazingly. Why? Because the refugees are pouring in. And when they're pouring in, they're bringing with them their sacred either memories, probably scrolls. And the three scrolls that scholars suggest, we're into probabilities here, so I won't keep... I don't want you to take anything I'm saying as absolutely certain, but it's as close as I can get in view of study to where we are in the present understanding of scholarship. And they're in a good place, scholars. So probably the beginnings of the book of Deuteronomy was started up here in Samaria, where the city was big enough, the public service was big enough, the economy of the place was strong enough to afford the luxury of people working, not in the farm or as on horses or whatever they're doing, but in writing and reading and library and that kind of thing. That requires a bit of a substructure to be able to do that. So the beginnings of what will become the book of Deuteronomy come south, and the stuff from Amos and Hosea is coming down, the memory of that talk, because people in here wouldn't have a clue about it, they never heard about it, but it's coming down. Now, in Jerusalem, at that same period, at the end of the 8th century we looked at, were two prophets, Isaiah, who went right through till about 700, whom we skipped over because I've already got it on the web from 2 years ago, and Micah, whom we looked at last week. So they're the four early prophets of the 8th century, and a key date is 721. You okay with all that? Let's move on. In 701, that is, the last year of the Judah, so we're at the beginning of our century, Judah was pretty well destroyed by the Assyrians. But Jerusalem survived. That's what we know. When you read the Bible in different parts of why Jerusalem survived, some of the records, it was a wonderful miracle. The angel of the Lord came and slayed the people in the camp and they got some disease and all that. There are three or so different understandings of what happened. The simplest understanding is in the book of Kings, second book of Kings, chapter 18, verse 13 to 16. And this one, we know now, we didn't know 50 years ago, fits with the Assyrian annals, which have been discovered since. So the Assyrians had their story about what happened, obviously, which people didn't know. Now we do. It's been discovered. And it fits with this. So let's take this as being as close as we can get to the data of what happened in 701. I'll read it to you. King Sennacherib of Assyria, and those of you who know Lord Byron, Sennacherib came down like a wolf on the fold. Okay, that's what it's talking about, 701. King Sennacherib of Assyria came up against all the fortified cities of Judah and captured them. King Hezekiah of Judah sent to the king of Assyria at Lachish. Lachish down south, I haven't got there, down south of Jerusalem, a fortified town. And he said to the king, I have done wrong, withdraw from me. Whatever you impose on me, I will bear. The king of Assyria demanded of King Hezekiah of Judah 300 talents of silver and 30 talents of gold. Hezekiah gave him all the silver that was found in the house of Yahweh and in the treasuries of the king's house. At that time, Hezekiah stripped the gold from the doors of the temple of Yahweh and from the doorposts that King Hezekiah of Judah had overlaid and gave it to the king of Assyria. Jerusalem survived because the king had enough brains to realize the whole place is going to be wiped out. So he traded and he said, okay, we'll pay you this tribute money if you'll let us off. And the king was happy to accept that, and off they went. There may have been other complications, but that's the year 701, the end of our earlier century. Now we move into the 7th century, which is our topic, our area. In the 7th century, all you've got left is Judah. The rest is all, these are even Samaritan names. Galazar, that's Gilead, Samarana, which is a Assyrian form of Samaria, and so on. We can say all that. So that's all you've got left. Jerusalem right in the northern part of it, and then most of this is desert, down to Beersheba and so on. Hezekiah died in 687. The Deuteronomic school, that is the people who wrote the book of Deuteronomy, and in exile, which we'll come to yet, we'll be there in a month's time, they wrote also the history. They wrote the books of Judges, Joshua, 1 Kings, 2 Kings, 1 Samuel, sorry, and 2 Samuel, and 1 Kings and 2 Kings. The whole, inverted commas, history. They don't call it history. They call it prophecy. Because they're interested in what God was doing in their story. They're not interested in, as we would be for writing history, in getting the facts all right. Their focus is somewhere else. And it's not very good history, a lot of it, though there's historical data in it, and we're not studying it now. But that's the Deuteronomic school. So they are responsible for a big swad of the Old Testament. Deuteronomy itself, and then all those early unwritten prophets, the history period, right through. Okay. So they're fulsome in their praise of Hezekiah, because he tried to reform the place, he was trying to be faithful to Yahweh, etc., etc., and you can read about it if you want to. His son Manasseh had a long reign all through the middle part of the 700s, 687 to 642. Now, he was a vassal of Assyria, and he's criticized highly by he's the baddie. The real baddie at the time. In fact, later on when Jerusalem is destroyed, which we'll come to in a month's time if you're still here, they had to think, well, why did God destroy Jerusalem? Because Josiah, whom we're going to come to in a minute, was such a marvellous king. Why did he get killed at the age of 39? You know, what is God doing? Because, again, they're assuming that everything that happens, God does. So God is just, so there must be a reason. Well, what was the reason? Poor old Manasseh copped it for every side. It must have been he was so bad that God had to kind of still punish because it had been unrepentant. So poor Manasseh gets a bad airing. What he was like as a king, I don't know, you don't know. There's very little about him in the Book of Kings, and it's all negative, and it's all from a point of view that is a bit skewed. He probably just did his best. He probably had to survive, and to survive he had to pay tax and he had to allow the Assyrians to come in. Yes, it's true. He put a statue of Ashur, the god of Assyria, in the temple. Did he have much choice? What happens to a little corner store if Woolworths come in next door? What do you do? There's a lot of pressure going on. So anyhow, I'm not here to judge him. Then his son, Amon, was 642 to 640, and he was assassinated. And so we come to the first words, the superscription, they call it, above, written above. So an editorial introduction to our prophet Zephaniah, and it reads like this. It says, the word of Yahweh came to Zephaniah. Yah at the end is Yahweh. Can you see that? I-A-H is Y-H. So Zephan comes from the Hebrew word meaning to protect. So his name is Yahweh Protects. Okay. Unique in the Bible, it gives this long son of Cushi, son of Gedaliah, son of Amariah, son of Hezekiah. You look at all the other prophets, they go back one generation, maybe two, but never four. Why is he tracing Zephaniah's family tree back so far? Now we're into just surmise, really, but some scholars suggest maybe he was a distant relative of the great, the Hezekiah that we've talked about, you know, from a lateral line or something. And so they're giving him as much position as he can. Could be. Not unlikely. But this word of Yahweh came to Zephaniah when? In the days of King Josiah, son of Amon of Judah. Now we've got our location for our lecture. What happened? 640, King Josiah became king, just to fit the dates in a bit, and he was only 8 years old. So he's not going to exercise command of the country till he's 18 or 19 or something like that. In the meantime, it would be his mother. The queen mother had a pretty powerful position, a lot of she would have been running it. In 628, Ashurbanipal, who was the Assyrian king, died. And that left an interesting gap. Because by now, 628, Babylon, which is in southern Iraq today, whereas Ashur is in north, are you with me? Babylon is starting to get a bit restive and a bit determined and a bit unhappy, and so the Assyrian Empire is not as solid as it was for the last 150 years. So there's a bit shaky stuff there, and when Ashurbanipal dies, Josiah, who's now in his majority, decides, and this is in the books, and we're getting closer to history now as we move into this century, he decides he wants to regain the promised land, the land that he, in his ideology or imagination, thought David had. You know, the golden age when David had both north and south and across to Gilead and across to Moab and all the tribes, and he was going to reconstitute. That was his desire. So to do it, it's full of propaganda. Some propaganda is true, as you know. Some propaganda is to stir up people to do what you want to do according to your agenda. But that's what his aim was to do. One of the things he decided to do in 622, so now he's, I can't work out all those years, he's 24, I think, if I've got it right. He starts what's called the Deuteronomic Reform. Because the story is, and no scholar is able to say whether it's real or whether it's wishful thinking or what it is, but the story is that when he was refixing up Jerusalem, getting rid of the old statues that Manasseh had put there, and they discovered in a pot in the temple, back in the sacristy somewhere, a copy of a scroll of the Deuteronomos. The nomos is Torah, Deutero is second. It was something to do with the Torah, which had been neglected. And when he read it, he was shocked. And this was the Deuteronomic people, who were lay people, by the way, they pushed for, this is why things have gone so bad for so long. We've got to reform. We've got to get back to Moses. We've got to get back to having the Passover properly. You know, we've got to get back to the Torah. We've got to obey God's will, and we haven't been. So this document that was discovered in the temple, or another possibility, my hunch would be that the Deuteronomic people had gone underground during Manasseh and were working on the spirituality of, and they brought it to the attention of the king, and whatever. But anyhow, whatever happened, because of that, he decided he would be faithful to the Torah, and the Deuteronomic reform was put in place in 622, and they got rid of all the high places and other things, and they, you know, that kind of thing. So they were going to reform their religion. And this reform is supported, look at the dates, by Zephaniah. I think that's the key insight you need if you're going to study Zephaniah, that he's living at a time when everything's all over the place. There are people who are saying no and yes. There's a reform happening in the church. Go back to the Reformation, if you like, and look at all the mess that was going on then between in Germany and all over the place. So it's that kind of turmoil. He's coming out on the side of the reform of Josiah. And now we'll look at the text and see if we can see bits and pieces of that.